When a family goes through a divorce and with the children, there's just no way to explain everything that occurs in the child's life that eats at them like a hidden disease or a cancer. And yet, when the family reconciles and comes back together, it solve so much of that stuff. If you can reunite with the original mate, with the father. My father began ragging me from the overseas during World War II. He was working in a shipyard at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii. I was thrilled beyond description. Each letter I read and reread and over again and tucked them under my mattress and my pillow. When he returned to the United States after World War II, I went to visit him. He had divorced his second wife and was living in a rooming house. We spent several days getting reacquainted. We visited the parks together. We even went to the county fair. After this, he began to visit me at home. He and mother remarried eventually when I was 11. For the next 3 years, we were a family again. These were three wonderful years. My daddy was back, and we were a family again. Well, we moved to Galveston, Texas, where we had lived for a year before the first divorce. This was the time of comparative family stability. Dad had a steady job, mom was at home, and I was doing well in school. I don't remember stuttering during this time. I lived for the weekends because Dad and I were together Friday night, all day Saturday, and Sunday afternoon. The weekends all fit the same pattern. Cash the paycheck on Friday afternoon. Buy groceries and get the fishing tackle or hunting gear ready for Saturday. Be up before dawn, number two, on Saturday. Be ready to go. We'd grab a quick breakfast and a sack lunch from mom. We would spend the day hunting, fishing, or working on a friend's shrimp boat. And on Saturday night, the family would join other Boilermakers families at Lou's Bar for beer, recreation. That was billiards and darts and slot machines. Oh my. And for fellowship. The bar would close at midnight and everybody would go home. Mom was not a drinker, but she always stayed close to my dad. Number three, Sunday. Oh, that was church day for mom and me. Dad would stay at home and read the newspaper, avoiding church, because he still held a grudge against the church for his treatment in the religious orphanage where his mother had placed him and his older brother when his father divorced her. The rest of the day was spent on the beach, which was only a block from our apartment. The next year, in 1947, the interruption there was the Texas City disaster. Two ships loaded with ammonium nitrate fertilizer exploded at the docks in Texas City, only 3 miles across Galveston Bay from my home and school. The blast killed about 2,700 people and broke windows in our school. We evacuated the school and it rained oil on us as we waited in our fire drill positions. I thought the boiler had blown up in the school and we'd had lost the janitor. Dad spent the next 2 weeks cutting steel in Texas City to recover bodies from the wreckage. These were tragic but exciting times. My father's experience with his family divorce made him fiercely independent and deeply angry. His mother had kept the three girls with her, but put Dad and his brother in an orphanage. He ran away from the orphanage when he was 14 years old. Dad got a job working in a railroad machine shop. He was following his father's type of work because he was working in a machine shop for the railroad. His mantra was, no matter how much education you have, every man needs to have a trade. A trade is a marketable skill, like a mechanic, a carpenter, a boilermaker, etc., to see him through the dark, tough times. He spent every spare moment teaching me mechanical and metalworking skills. I rebuilt my first gasoline engine when I was 12 years old. Dad's formal education was only to the third grade, yet he was an avid reader, had beautiful penmanship, and could illustrate any lesson or idea with pencil drawings. For 3 years, I soaked up every bit of wisdom, skill, and information that Dad offered. I had missed him so much for so long that I wanted to make up for lost time. I was his loving shadow, literally. He did something in Galveston that was extremely important to me later. I think every son needs this to happen. But it was a statement that blessed me immeasurably. I recall vividly that day that Dad and Mom were walking behind me as we strolled down Market Street in downtown Galveston. And Dad said to Mother, "That's my boy, and I love him. He may become an engineer and be wealthy, or he may be a bum with holes in his britches, but it doesn't matter to me. He is my boy. I love him, and I'm proud of him." Folks, that statement liberated me to become anything I wanted to be. I was not bound by his expectations or limited by his ideas of success. No matter what I did or what I would become, my daddy would always love me. Wow, that was so comforting, so reassuring, such a blessing. That statement and a Bible verse were linked together when I was 16. The combination of the two set me free to become the person I am today, literally free to be who I am. The next major transition for our family in the, quote, 3 good years, unquote, was a move to San Pedro, California. I was 13 years old, entering the 7th grade, and life became very interesting. Dad had a better job than the one in Galveston, but living conditions were very unusual. We spent most of that year living in a 2-room efficiency apartment. It was actually an old converted motor court. We'd call it a motel today. I slept on a canvas army cot in the kitchen. The other room was my parents' bedroom. The kitchen was so small that the oven door could not be opened until I folded my cot in the morning. The motor court was located on Beacon Street in San Pedro. It was across from Terminal Island Ferry Landing. And on my way, that went over to the Naval Base. But on my way to Dana Junior High School every morning, I had to walk down a street littered with wine, whiskey, and beer bottles. The sidewalk was also the bedroom for winos and dopers. I told my parents one day that my morning run to school, I didn't dare walk, was a game of playing tippy-toe through the winos. The interesting part of all this is the fact that I did not mind any of it. I was happy that we were together as a family. We just did what we had to do to be together. For me, these were happy times. Dad did not do any binge drinking, the type that unleashes anger, and we had family stability. Dad had a good job at the shipyard. Mom was apparently happy. And I had friends at school from Oklahoma and Arkansas. These two boys loved hiking and camping, and so did I. However, at the end of the school year, Dad's job ended, and we had to move back to Beaumont, Texas. We moved back into the home of my mother's parents. Mom and Dad took Mom's old bedroom, and I slept on the back porch. Dad found work at the Pennsylvania shipyard, and Mom went back to work for the Southwestern Bell Telephone Company. That was in the days of the operator picking. You pick up the phone, the operator said, "Number, please," and you give them the number. And now it's such a change. Well, let me interrupt the story at this point to give you a little chronology. When I wrote the last paragraph, I was 22 years old. I'd done so at the urging of a gentleman named Chester Swore, who said I needed to record my feelings for others. I was a senior student in college, a newly wedded husband, and pastor of a small rural church. Well, actually two of them. All of this was a very heavy emotional load. When I started dragging the events of my 14th year out of the crypt of my past, the memories hurt so badly I could not continue. I was experiencing an emotional overload. Every time I tried to continue, I would experience depression and weeping. All that I had controlled and suppressed for years was getting too close to bursting out. That's why I want to tell you this next part of the story. Tears kept blurring the lines of my writing pad. I quit writing. I put the manuscript in the file cabinet and tried to forget it. I was successful in putting it out of my mind until a few years ago. Many of the people with whom I've been ministering and counseling had problems resulting from their parents divorcing when they were children. So I felt compelled to finish my story. I dug out the unfinished manuscript and began to write again. It has taken 66 years for the healing to get to the point where I can finish the story. This is indicative of the depth of the pain and the damage caused by divorce. I feel compelled to finish this story for the benefit of others who are considering a divorce that involves children. The tale continues now, but my wounds have healed, but the scars are still there and they are still tender. My past experiences have enabled me to be a wounded healer. That's to be one who's been through the conflict, the wounding, and the healing. And now the healing has enabled me to help others by being the one who's trying to help them on that same journey. The move to Beaumont and living with my grandparents was supposed to be a temporary arrangement until Mom and Dad found jobs. When school started, we were still living with my grandparents. I entered the 8th grade at Dick Dowling Junior High School. Shortly after that, everything turned into a disaster at home. I was 14 years old. Oh, what a painful, angry, and confusing year it became. It was during this year that my father began to stay out late at night and come home drunk. One day, Dad came home angry. He'd been drinking. Until he had a few beers in him, he never seemed to be able to express his anger and resentment. It was after school when I came home and found Mother sitting numbly silent at the dining room table. I saw my dad in the bedroom throwing his clothes into a metal and cardboard suitcase. I asked, "Where are you going?" He replied, "I'm moving out. Your mother and I just cannot live together any longer." Wow, I felt like I'd been hit by a truck. When did this happen? I'd not seen any heated arguments or loud talking or fights or apparent conflicts. I asked, "What happened?" His answer seemed to be inadequate. An inadequate reason to cause the family breakup. Maybe he was not telling me the truth, the whole truth. Maybe it was something I had done. I asked Dad, "Is it something I've done, Daddy? I promise I'll do better or change. Just don't leave. Please don't leave." He did not even pause in his packing, but said, "No, son, it's not you. Your mother and I have been through this before. We just cannot live together, and I'm moving out." I sat on the bedside beside his rapidly filling briefcase, or suitcase really, tearfully begging him not to leave. When the case was full, he latched it shut, picked it up, and left. There was no goodbye hug, no kiss, no handshake. He just left. As the screen door slammed closed behind him, and he started down the sidewalk, I choked back my shouted pleas. It was hopeless. I was suddenly crushed under the load of emotions which had been buried since I was 12 years old. The lonesome, melancholy sadness, which had eaten at my heart like a cancer, came rolling back. The sadness which had caused me to curl up in my mother's lap and cry for hours, a crying that her mother's comfort could not stop. I was crying because of an absence that could not be filled by anyone but Dad, a crying and sobbing that was the only lullaby that took me to sleep on many nights as I wept in my bed. But this was different because a deeper sense of guilt was added. It did not matter what he said, I still felt guilty. My feelings of guilt had two facets. The first was over something I might have done to cause him to leave. And the second was over my inability, not being able to say something to make him stay. My parents separated from each other, but I separated from neither. I loved them both. I was not mad at my father because I loved him and did not want, I just didn't want it to go. And I just didn't know what was driving or pulling him away. I was not angry with my mother because I loved her and I knew she hurt too. And I knew she was the kind who would try to solve problems. I could not verbalize or even have a full perception of what was happening to me emotionally, physically, and relationally. My ability to develop relationships was severely damaged. I felt sick. The old cycle of hurt, of seething anger followed by despair, flooded over me, and I felt trapped. I wanted to love and have them both, but I felt trapped and labyrinth of emotions. Guilt, was it something I had done that caused them to separate? Inadequacy, could I have done something to keep them together? Sadness, is my crying for my dad hurting mom? And then there was anger. Who can I attack and destroy for making me hurt like this? It was impossible to assess the emotional damage and the pain until I began to write about it. My reaction to my parents' breakup was different this time. There was no extended weeping this time as there had been in the past. My weeping stopped when the door slammed shut, when I watched him and his suitcase disappear down the street. This time the breakup of my family produced a powerful, seething anger, much as the anger of a victim feels when he or she has had her home invaded and robbed, or she or he has been mugged and robbed. My anger resulted from my sense of loss. I was angry because my sense of well-being had been stolen. I was angry over my own sense of helplessness. I was developing a growing fury, like a building thunderstorm, which is about to give birth to a tornado. I was filled with anger that could not find a focus or a target. How did I handle it? I did what the child of an alcoholic does. I throttled it, coated it with good behavior. I surrounded my feelings with a sense of humor, learned to laugh while gritting my teeth. I learned to do this with Dad when he was drunk. I did anything to keep the drunk happy and peaceful. Well, I learned to be an extrovert comic who could navigate the minefield of words and looks and attitudes and appearances that trigger the release of a drunk's meanness and anger. I became an expert at building shallow but pleasant relationships. These skills were valuable to me as tools to mask and control my fury and pain. I got it under control. It was like putting a ferocious dog in a pen. I did not dare let it out because it might not be able to be controlled in its destructive behavior. So I built a fence around my life, a blind fence. When new acquaintances were made, I would not let them in the fence. Instead, I would hang posters of the, quote, me, unquote, on the fence. I thought they would like to see. If they did not respond positive as they approached, I would put out a different poster. If that didn't please them, I'd keep changing posters on the fence until I found one to which they would pleasantly relate. But that would never get inside the fence to the real me, the angry me, the tearless me, the tough me, the profoundly sad me. My tears dried up in spite of my pain, disappointment, or any other emotion. They would not return for years. I began to stutter again. After Dad left, I tried to find ways to vent my anger. I was afraid that any angry, antisocial behavior might start Mom thinking again, John needs a stepfather. I found one solution. Friday nights were movie nights or entertainment nights. Under the pretense of going to a movie, I would go to Magnolia Park and wait for the groups of high school boys to congregate. Even though I was an eighth grade student and not there yet, my weight and strength concealed my age. It was an accepted fact that every Friday night in the park, eventually, it would end in a gang fight. I know it disturbed the neighborhood. Oh, but for me, it was therapy. Folks, that's just a little bit of what happens when families mess up and get a divorce. When a man and wife begin to consider themselves and not their children, please stay together, love each other. Jesus Christ is the answer to the love that you need to make you who you need to be. God bless you.